This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 118 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. The thing I want to do is bring Brian and Patty on to promote their books, to promote their creative endeavors, be a good host, and tell you all the cool reasons why you should buy the next thing that they are doing a Kickstarter on. The problem arises from the fact that I like these guys and I just want to hang out. This isn't so much a promotion as it is just us jackassing around with some promotion thrown in. Brian, Patty, as always, I am honored and I appreciate your trust and your friendship. Everyone, jump on their Kickstarter. There's just a few days left, 4 or 5. It's for their third Total Action Force book. The first two are phenomenal. You will not be disappointed. These guys do the legwork. They do the grunt effort. They find the people. They do the interviews. Patty's writing is fantastic. Brian's layouts are amazing. And then this particular book has stuff we've never seen before. Grab the book and enjoy the conversation. Not only did I have a great time hanging with these guys, but I laughed all the way through the edit. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Only one Action Force has Palatoy's Action Force. You can cut that out and stick that at the end. That can be the line to wrap up the show.
That's the very beginning. Fuck your G.I. Joe, Palatoy.
Do we want to actually start?
I had a guy commented on Facebook there the other day. Book looks interesting, but it's just a G.I. Joe knockoff. So I replied and said, well, you know, Action Force was released before G.I. Joe. And obviously, you know, referring to the 3¾-inch line. And he came back on and said, yeah, nice try. G.I. Joe was released in 1964. So, you know, he's got one up on me there, right? And he said, and it's still a knockoff. But what I would say is that it's not a knockoff because Action Man is an officially licensed G.I. Joe product rebranded as Action Man. But in 1967, when they brought it over, it was exactly, you know, what G.I. Joe released in 64 and was fully licensed. That's not a knockoff. That's just called licensing.
That's a partnership.
And then Palatoy, being the design innovators that they are, started off bringing in their own uniforms, creating their own accessories for Action Man. And all that material they created went back to America and was released as G.I. Joe. So it's totally a symbiotic relationship between the two companies. And we're not even mentioning the innovations that they made to the Action Man mannequin, between the hair and the hands, the sharpshooter head, and even redesigning the whole body. Again, all those Palatoy innovations went back over to Hasbro. They could modernize their G.I. Joe figures with all of that. So when it comes down to the 4-inch line, Hasbro and Palatoy were separately and independently working on their own 4-inch or 3¾-inch line. Neither one knew what the other one was doing. And Palatoy's one was inspired by mostly Palatoy designs for Action Man, like the Ground Assault Trooper, the SAS Trooper, like, you know, the Naval Assault, Arctic Assault. These are all Palatoy designs they created for Action Man that they repurposed for Action Force. And then you have Paper and Woodward, or Rappo and Pape, the freelance designers, coming up with brilliant vehicle designs, completely original, that still look really fresh to this day. So, you know, I didn't want to get into a big kind of trolling debate on Facebook with this guy. But really, the long and short of it is there's nothing rip-offish at all about Action Force. It really is a brilliant, innovative line, and not taking anything away from G.I. Joe, which is also another brilliant, innovative line. But Action Force is able to hold its own in the 3¾ inch scale, 100%, and it's not a rip-off.
All I heard was Brian hates G.I. Joe.
Yeah. Brian's going to try to speech at Joel Fest next year and get lynched.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to do it in Texas this weekend. I'm going to get run out of town.
Listen, boy, your G.I. Joe's a shit.
Thank you for making us professional again, Brian.
don't worry. I'll derail the podcast. Don't worry. Give me 5 minutes. We'll be derailed again.
Yeah. We're lucky we got Brian this side of his Texas trip because he's going to come back sounding like Foghorn Leghorn. I say, son, how's our Kickstarter doing?
Well, if I look at it there now, right, what are we at? We're nearly at 50%. That's about 49%. That ain't bad.
For a day?
This is what, three hours in?
About nearly 4 hours in, and we're at the 50% mark almost.
Not bad for a knockoff.
Imagine if it wasn't a knockoff, Brian. How many we'd be at 100 grand already.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Before I derail us, this is the third book. And you guys are doing a shorter funding period this time.
Can I give the pithy answer?
Yeah, do go for it, Patty.
Jason, we're so tired.
Well, typically, you know, the campaign is there's a lot of activity right at the very beginning and a lot of activity right at the very end. And then you get this kind of very quiet period in the middle, and that's for like the majority of Kickstarter campaigns. Yep. I mean, obviously there are exceptions where you get, say, like Skybound's G.I. Joe compendium set that just skyrocket from start to finish, you know. But even that, if you look at the activity on that kind of bar chart kind of going up, it levels off slightly in the middle and then spikes again at the end. So there was no, I suppose, you know, we haven't really seen the value in doing like the extended campaigns. Like, I've seen campaigns go for, you know, books for 60 days.
Yeah.
And you're looking at like there's a whole month in the middle of zero activity. It's just, you know, let's just,
and actually,
see can we do it, you know, in 15 and
we noticed it ourselves, even with the Star Wars book. I mean, we had an early bird on Total Star Wars, and that accounted for most of the activity. Those 3 days in the early bird, we were really front-loaded. I think of the 700-odd backers, we got over 450 over those first 3 days. And then the last 3 days of the campaign, which also were pretty typically strong, they were strong, but they weren't like double your money strong. They were, you know, an extra 10 grand sort of stuff. It wasn't like a massive, you know, spike at the end either. So we just thought, there's an early bird with this as well. We're offering a pretty decent discount for the first 24 hours. We expect this will be front-loaded too. And we just thought, shorter campaign, get the orders in and get the book underway quicker, you know, because we're pretty confident it'll fund pretty quickly. We're not doing any stretch goals. We're not doing any fancy add-ons. We just wanted to really strip it back and be like, you know what? Do you want a book? Buy a book.
I think it's smart. It's Kickstarter is, I mean, well over a decade old now. What is it, like 13 years old or so? It is absolutely the well-known rule of Kickstarter to have about 24 to 72 hours of hard hitting and then silence, where you guys have to both fret and do a lot of work until you get to the very end where it picks up again. After 15 years of crowdfunding, people still go, well, I got to wait till the end because I haven't gotten paid yet. so you're still funding during that quiet period, the same question or the same comment that people have said for 15 years. So I think it's smart to cut it. This is not your first. According to my library, you guys have a very nice showing, a good track record. I think the second book was probably harder than this would be because it's your middle book. But this one is like, oh, I have two already. Can't miss the third, right?
Well, it's definitely going to be a great add-on. If you've got one and two, Volume 3 is going to have everything that we didn't put into Volume 1 and 2. Well, it covers pretty much the Palitoy era of Action Force. So there's not a ton of Action Force pre-production on the Hasbro side, because that was all done as G.I. Joe. They just took G.I. Joe products and brought it over here. And the G.I. Joe pre-production material, there's other, you know, great authors over in America who are covering that material, doing it really, really well. So there's no point in kind of treading on their kind of ground. But from a Palitoy perspective, in this book, it's going to feature, so the Raffo and Pape, or which is now Raffo, Pape and Woodward, got access to their archive of Action Force drawings. So the complete archive was made available for this book. Some pieces people will have seen online before, but there's going to be a lot of material in there never before seen. Brilliant, beautiful kind of marker renderings for kind of vehicle concepts. It's also got Bob Breakin's and Brian Turner's archive of kind of Polaroids and sketches and photographs of work that they worked on for Action Force Series 1 and Series 2. And so it's going to have all that material. And again, a couple of pieces have been seen before online, but there's a lot of material never before seen that's going to be in there. And then for Action Force Series 3, which is Hasbro material, while there wasn't a lot of concept work done for that, there was a lot of kind of photography of the, when they were preparing maybe some of the different colorways for the different vehicles, things like that. There's lots of photography of that was done by Neville Chadwick, and the Neville Chadwick archive is accessible for this book. Now, Neville Chadwick's archive, to clarify who Neville Chadwick is for people who don't know, he's a photographer that Palitoy used for their packaging design, for their catalogs, for their marketing, advertising. He was one of the biggest commercial photographers in Leicester, and Palitoy was one of his smallest clients. He had way bigger clients than Palitoy, but he did a ton of work for Palitoy. So that archive is accessible. We won't be able to use the entire archive because it is massive, but we'll be licensing, like, a lot of his photography is going into the book as well, fully licensed. That's going to give us some nice insights into kind of the pre-thinking for Action Force Series 3 and Action Force Series 2 as well. And then if that all of that great material wasn't enough in the book, it's going to have the full mint on card lineups for all of Series 1, Series 2 and Series 3, both the figures and the vehicles. It doesn't get any more comprehensive than this for Action Force. And while it won't be very heavy on the text, there will be enough text in there that's going to certainly, you know, if this is the only Action Force book that you buy, you're going to have a really good grasp of the story behind these amazing toys.
Mm-hmm. I think basically what we're going to look at is what was planned and what was released, and you can compare and contrast those two kind of genres if you want. Oh yeah, I think, you know, we've extensively covered the Palitoy history between, you know, Total Action Force Volume 1. We extensively covered the history of International Heroes in Total Action Force Volume 2. There wasn't anything further. I don't think we needed to really write for the third volume. But we have so many images that really the captions and stuff are going to tell the story. And we found that even with Star Wars, like, how much material that we had to cut out of Star Wars in the end to get that to fit 250 pages. Like, you were dropping photos. You were dropping photos left, right, and center because you're just like, I can't fit it in. We were going to include a lot more of the Star Wars Action Force crossover stuff in Total Star Wars. And you were looking at it going, I just do not have space to put it in. So we've moved it into this Action Force book.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, I do not have an extra space for this photo of a prototype RoboSkull with the TIE fighter parts. So I'm just going to have to put it into the Action Force book.
Let's end there. That's perfect. I'm a little speechless because I know some of this stuff already just from being friends and talking over the months. And then having Volume 1 and 2, having my Palitoy story, having seen what you guys have already done, this is incredible. And having access to these archives, you know, for us in the States, it's kind of a given that, you know, the stories of like Ron or somebody going to the dumpster and pulling things out. And we've seen the D-class booth for years of all the crazy stuff that was found in the 90s. But you guys are going to the archives of, whether it's the photographer or it's Bob or, I don't know, man, this is really, that's really exciting. That's really compelling.
I mean, just even for us looking at some of the photos we were finding, and you're like, this is the second photo that exists of this thing, or nobody's ever seen this before. You know, that way it was, it's genuinely exciting to find this stuff. It's like, because you think when you're researching this stuff for so long or reading so many, you've read so many, you know, we've all read a ton of books on G.I. Joe.
Right.
And to that we're still finding stuff for Palitoy Action Force. Like that there was still stuff out there to find. Like any one of those photo archives we've got access to would be groundbreaking. But the fact that we've got four different sets of archives and most of it is new stuff is kind of crazy. Even this late in the game, you know, these toys have been out for 40 years now and we're still finding new content about them.
Total Action Force Volume 8. Just a pitch. You guys are bored.
I would totally do it. Even now, where we're at, like this, the more you research this, the more you realize what you don't know.
Sure.
Because the deeper you get into it, you go, well, oh, what about how did this stuff happen? Or when did that happen? And there aren't answers to those questions. So I'd love to be able to go back in time and kind of look over the shoulders of the marketing team, because I think that's the biggest gap in our knowledge. Uh-huh. And I've said that a few times. We've got great access, you know, to the design team. Like we've spoken to, obviously, very close with Bob Breakin. I've had many chats with Bob.
Yeah.
Bob was able to talk with his colleague, Brian Turner, before he passed away and got some great memories from Brian as well. We've met Dave Barnacle, who did all the graphics for Action Force, you know, the packaging graphics. You know, we were lucky to meet him and interview him for Total Action Force of Battle Years. That was amazing. We've met with Roger Morrison, the tooling manager, who would have worked on the Hasbro tooling and on the original Action Force tooling. And then John Holmes, who was the manufacturing manager, putting it all together on the factory floor and getting it out to the warehouse and out to the retailers. So the only people we haven't spoken to are the marketing people, because our marketing contact is Jeff Maisey from Palitoy. Star Wars was his thing. He wasn't involved in Action Force. And by the time Action Force was a product at Palitoy, he'd moved on anyway to the Benelux companies within General Mills Toy Group. So he wasn't involved at all at that stage. So the big gap in the knowledge is the marketing side of it. And that is someday, you know, we will find someone from that side of it. And there will be another Action Force book.
There was that mysterious brand manager who was on Action Force for a long time. All the guys know his name. And we're like, well, whatever happened to him? And they're like, oh, he moved to America and he disappeared. Literally, nobody's heard of him for 40 years and we couldn't track him down. Like, it was Andy was his name?
And Andy Lowe. And he went
Andy
to
Lowe,
the... He moved to the Western Publishing Group, who were doing a lot of work for Mattel at the time in the 80s. So that's as much as we know. I mean, there are other people involved in the marketing team as well, but Andy would have been the brand manager.
So that's the big call out. If anybody knows Andy Lowe...
Yes, formerly ex Palitoy up until about 1984. Let us know.
But being friends with the marketing guy, or being contacts with the marketing guy from Star Wars, that really shows you, you can see sort of the gaps and the valleys on the Palitoy side, or on the Action Force side.
Oh yeah.
Having that contact on the Star Wars side. So it validates what you've been thinking this whole time about that piece being a crucial black hole.
It's a big piece of the puzzle. And as a comparator, the marketing story in the Star Wars book that's only just gone to print, I'd say it's 50% of the story, if not more. The marketing people had way more to tell us than the guys on the tooling side and the design side. And there was a lot of innovative design done for Star Wars by Palitoy. So but the marketing story was a much bigger story to tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because effectively, you know, the Palitoy guys had stopped designing for Star Wars after year two. whereas the marketing guys were marketing it for 7 years.
That makes sense.
So they had a lot more detail on promotional activities. I mean, even if we obviously, for the Star Wars book, we managed to get a lot of photography of Darth Vader. Palitoy had their own Darth Vader costumes made, and they sent Darth Vader on tour around the UK and Ireland. So we were able to find tons of photography of, you know, Darth Vader showing up to, you know, turn on Christmas lights and, you know, turn up in, you know, with a Palitoy minder behind him and turning up at toy stores all across the UK. But they did the same for Action Force, where they had a guys going around in Baron Ironblood costumes. Mm. We've only been able to find one photo of those events.
Wow.
Whereas we've literally got two. Yeah. But we've literally got dozens of Star Wars ones. And you know, those were published in the local papers, so we got them from the marketing people, but also from the local papers, you know, in the UK. We're saying Darth Vader comes to Somerset or whatever.
Yeah.
But we never, there's none of that for Action Force, but we know this stuff was going on. Yeah. Because, you know, we have a couple of photos of evidence that it was happening. But I'd love to talk to the people about that, because, for example, we know who made the Darth Vader costumes. We interviewed him for a Star Wars book. We've no idea who made the Baron Ironblood costumes.
That's Carol Dayton. We did an interview her about that, and so she was head of PR for Palitoy. Well, I need to go back over that interview again just to double check that. But it wasn't Nick Farmer, no?
We asked him about the Star Wars ones, and he said basically the only costumes he made for Palitoy were the Darth Vaders. And
he did the Captain Zargon ones as well.
He did the Zargon the Action Man ones. Yeah, he didn't do the Action Force ones. So it'd be interesting to find out who did those.
This is where we've been lucky having access to Kirk Bazygian for as long as we've had. That's not been a missing, you know, and now we have access to Vinny D'Oliva, who took over after him. So on the G.I. Joe side, we've had that story. So it's interesting how you guys can see from the G.I. Joe aspect of having the marketing guys, and then from the Star Wars, the breadth of gap that you have in the Action Force story. I hope you guys can find Andy Lowe or an equivalent. But speaking of your Star Wars book, that's shipping soon, you said?
That is going to ship in November. So it's being printed right now.
Awesome.
In fact, exclusive. I know this is not a video podcast, but I'm going to show this to you guys. What I've got here is color proofs arrived in today. So, Paddy, I'll get a little update out on this tomorrow. I'll take some photographs. But essentially, it's just color proofs of select pages that I wanted to, you know, the card backs and things like that.
Yeah.
And the color is absolutely excellent. So I'm really, really pleased with that.
Are you guys using the same printer that you've used for your previous books?
So we're going through the Imago Publishing Group to do all the printing with them.
We have a direct comparison to what the Star Wars book and what this new one, because you're not changing publishers. So the same quality that has always existed, the same stitching, the same beautiful opening, everything else.
I would say this is even higher quality than Total Action Force, the Battle Years and Total Action Force Volume 2, because we used, you know, printers that we sourced here locally for that. I mean, good, reputable printers. With the Battle Action Force Treasury Editions working with Rebellion, that opened the door to a lot of their print contacts. And that suddenly, we got much better access to much higher level of kind of print suppliers. So that's where the last couple of books have been, like David Gillis's More News as It's Made. That was done, you know, again through the Mago. Brilliant book. Action Force Customs, Action Force World Building. Brilliant book. Grab that, TotalToyBooks.com. It's only €50. It's the best €50 you're going to spend. If books are your thing, totally get it. But the Star Wars book, the colors are absolutely amazing. I'm really pleased with them. So that book is going to be, we'll have it in the warehouse in November, and it's going to ship almost immediately to all the backers and anyone who pre-orders in the, you know, through Pledge Manager straight after the campaign. They should have the books in time for Christmas, which would be great.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it because, you know, I'm on that list.
Yeah. And you already own every Star Wars book in existence. So what's one more?
I'm excited because between Total Action Force 1, which I loved because it's something that I've known about for a long time, but the two of you guys were able to give enough that I could feel like I'm really diving in, learning a lot. You know, I have some, I want more. And then volume two, which is much closer to what I'm going to know because of how much G.I. Joe's in it, than the My Palitoy story.
Which is now sold out, actually. We're sold out of Palitoy story.
Yeah, that sold out.
A phenomenal book.
Bob has been bringing them to events in the UK. He swears he's retired, but he's still yet to slow down. And whenever he goes to an event in person, he always sells through quite a stack. So he's managed to sell through all of those now, at least in this end of the world.
If he's still not quite retired, there's no hope of getting him back to the US, I suppose.
never say never.
We did raise with him next last time we talked to him, and he was like, I am not doing a long distance flight ever again.
Fair enough.
But he always says that he's not doing any more shows, and yet he still keeps showing up at shows. So
all right, so we can beat the Joe Fest drum one more time then.
See if Ed will spring for first class and maybe we convince him.
That's right, because he was lovely to meet and hang out with. Everybody I talked to that met him that weekend has just good, fun stories. The number of people that ran into him in the bar. What a gift to all of us that you guys on Skeletron brought him over.
Well, Skeletron, we didn't. We had nothing to do with it.
Skeletron brought him over. We just kind of hung out with him.
Well, then it was a gift to me that you guys introduced me to him. So thank you. So that, and then Gillis's book with all the customs, which is truly amazing. The photos that you take and then the customs that he's doing, Brian, is really compelling because for 5 POA, I had no idea that they could move that much. You know what I mean? They just have life. This volume 3, I don't know. I've been excited for it ever since you guys mentioned it. You guys have given me hints of it's coming, and now it's here. I don't know what else to say other than, like, if people aren't listening to the three of us talk and rushing out to buy it, I don't know how to convince them other than breaking legs.
I'll promise you this. If it does well enough, we'll go to Joe Fest next year.
You guys were so missed at Joe Fest this year.
People, if we can get enough money to pay for the flights out of this Kickstarter, if we can cover the cost of the book, that'll be your stretch goal, okay? Get Paddy and Brian to Joe Fest.
That's right. Have a pint.
But what I would say is, if anyone, certainly on the American side of the Atlantic, you've got an interest in Action Force, you've got an interest in Baron Ironblood and the Red Shadows, this is going to be a great book that will kind of show you where those roots started, how those iconic toys came to be, including the RoboSkull, the original RoboSkull, and all the other great Action Force teams as well, and then how G.I. Joe fitted into that line at the very end of its lifetime. It'll be a great little insight. And it's very visual, loads of great photographs. And I'm particularly excited to showcase all of the prototype figures that were produced. So it'll be the most comprehensive archive, bringing all the prototypes together on the pages here. So it's if prototypes are your thing, we're talking like either wax or kind of resin cast figures, fully painted up for different kind of toy fair displays. It's going to be lots of that stuff, different head sculpts that weren't produced for series one, but were able to get reused later in the line as well. Like, very hugely excited for it.
All of that is my interest.
Speaking of customs, obviously, we have quite a lot of Palitoy takes on what they were going to do with the G.I. Joe vehicles that didn't get produced as well. So, if you're interested in customizing some of your G.I. Joe vehicles into almost made it Action Force stuff, there's going to be some of that in there too.
Let's just say there's a Z-Force Fang helicopter, Z-Force colored Fang helicopter, with a special trailer that doubles as a launch a landing pad for the helicopter, which then you can presumably is going to be towed by the Z-Force Jeep. So that there'll be Polaroids of that in there from Bob's personal collection. So they've
a couple of different vamp colorways as well. We found.
We already knew of the white and gray one. I don't remember the name of the special team.
Special Weapons Force.
Special Weapons. Yeah, and I know there's a couple American guys who have commission customs to make that team a reality. But having the colorways, the prototypes, the wax and resin, kitbashed vehicles, all of that is in my interest. I love it. All of the American authors who have put out this stuff and then going and seeing the declassified booth at Joe Fest and at AR and a couple other shows throughout the year, our community and our hobby is so much more than just buying something and making sure that there's no nose rub on the paint, like paint on the nose. I just messed up my whole words. There's no, but yeah, making sure that the nose doesn't have paint rub. It's the bottom skill level of what we do as a hobby and a community. I mean, outside of making your own thing, this is as close as you can get to the high side of what we do. And having access to the four archives and having access to Bob. And thankfully, he got a bunch of stuff from Brian. Did you guys ever get to meet Brian before he passed?
No.
Unfortunately, no. Not. He was very unwell for a long time. And I did ask Bob if he thought, you know, Brian would be up for me and Patty to visit him. And, you know, unfortunately, he said he just wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
So it's tough, you know, that to see somebody kind of, you know, declining and then suffering so badly. But he left behind an amazing legacy in terms of the toys he designed.
He's one of our legends, our heroes, our greats. For everything that we loved as children, it's a race against time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I was telling you, Jason, I'm researching the Starcom book now. Total Starcom going 2026, probably.
Cannot wait. I'm so excited for this.
It's extremely difficult to find people who worked in it now because a lot of them have passed on. I was, you know, reaching out to people who had worked on the cartoon series to interview them, and you're researching them and you're realizing, okay, deceased, you know, nearly all the writers are gone. Most of the production staff that I've reached out to are gone or at the age where they're just like, I do not remember. In a way, we were blessed with the Palatoy staff that they're all so engaged in the history of that company.
Yeah.
That they are still, you know, remember stuff that they worked on 45 years ago. The Coleco stuff for Starcom, it's just like, no, sorry, don't remember. I wouldn't feel comfortable being interviewed because I really don't remember.
That's crazy.
You know, it's a shame, man. But look, we'll just have to do it the best job we can, you know?
I mean, death comes for us all. And unfortunately, it's not the Jagoff who hot rods through our neighborhood. It's our legends and our greats, right? And then also, like, Starcom was only a couple years of a line. So I can see why, like, maybe it didn't make the indelible impression.
Yeah, exactly. In the same way that maybe G.I. Joe did, where you know, the guys working on Star Wars, it was 7 years of their career. So they remember.
Right.
And the same with Action Man was 18 years and Action Force was, you know, 4 years. But it was all the Action Man designers and stuff. So that stuff is more memorable to them. Whereas when you're talking about a toy line that lasted a year and a bit, or a cartoon series that lasted 13 episodes, they're like, yeah, I did 13 episodes of Starcom, but I also wrote 72 episodes of Thundercats that same year.
Wow.
Basically they were all, you know, working writers. They were probably doing a script a week at that stage. And it was like, yeah, I wrote 50 other animated shows that year too. I can't be expected to remember all of them. And that's fair.
It's sad, but it's fair. Not to get into what are you going to do next, but it does sound like, once again, this train only stops for about 2.5 minutes, get on or get lost. You guys just keep moving forward, which is good for me as a fan and a friend and a book collector. But it's also why, like, every time someone says, oh, you're a toy expert, right? I said, no, I know the toy experts. I'm friends with the toy experts. I just know a lot. But the experts, I can introduce you to them.
Well, the other book that I'm really excited to see coming out, and that's going to be completed later this year, is Total RoboSkull. That's one, because, you know, we've been promoting the Star Wars book, talking about Total Action Force Volume 3, and we can't really reveal anything about, like, Total RoboSkull. People, they have a general sense of what the book's about. I mean, it's about the RoboSkull, right? And obviously the RoboSkull Mark II is a huge, huge part of that.
Yeah.
we haven't shown off any pages, because we're working really closely with the guys in Skeletron on that, and it's probably the best kept secret in the toy book world at the moment, that everybody kind of knows about, but they haven't seen anything about it. So I think when people get that book into their hands, that's going to be, I'm so excited for that. We've got amazing content going in there, both in terms on the photography side, on the writing side, you know, on the vintage RoboSkull side. We certainly delve a lot deeper than we did in Total Action Force and Battle Years on that. Some great licensed use of imagery in there, and then lots of obviously new custom imagery created for, you know, for Skeletron and for the Mark II. It's just going to be a visual feast, but a really meaty read as well about the design of the most iconic toy ever. Very, very excited to share. And if people have not already, you know, pre-ordered that or backed it on the Kickstarter, head over to Skeletron.com right now. You can pre-order that book, get it into your stash, because when that comes out, you're going to want that in your collection with your Total Action Force volumes 1, 2, and 3, and you're going to want Total RoboSkull to finish it all off. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it'll be a nice companion piece, because, you know, it's going to be a similar format, you know, hardcover, same kind of size. It'll slot in quite well with the Action Force books as a kind of an addendum to that.
Yeah, I think that was a really smart thing that Ben and Mark approached you guys about very early on in their process. And to be able to capture that and to put that out as a companion piece. The Mark I and both Mark II RoboSkulls are currently on my living room floor.
I was going to ask you how the vintage is treating you.
The vintage is good. It sees combat. Now, to be fair, because of the kittens, it gets put up. It doesn't get left in the middle of the floor with the rest of the battle. It gets set up so that they can't chew on the eye guns. Just like the antennas and bits were taken off the Sea Lion and the Cosmic Cruiser.
So can I ask, how complete was the one you got at Joe Fest?
Complete.
Your Stephen Kelly special. So it's complete eye guns and gin guns and everything.
Yes.
Okay, because yeah. even mine, I had to go for repro parts for the chin guns, because didn't have them, and they don't pop up on vintage ones, don't pop up on eBay even here that often.
That was the conversation that Stephen and I had in regards to the RoboSkull and the flag, because we were both saying the same thing as what you just said about get it complete so I don't have a project, because I have a whole ocean between me and where that shit lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was saying that about the RoboSkull, and he was saying that about the flag.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I don't think he got the fantail railing, but I don't think he cares, which most people don't. It's the fantail railing. You never see it.
Mm-hmm.
He specifically looked for one that was as close to complete and in good condition as possible, because he didn't want to have to source flag parts from over here.
From the other 5 people who own a flag in Ireland.
Or that. And conversely, I didn't want to go in on a Project RoboSkull, because
mm-hmm.
it would be repro or nothing.
Yeah.
For as easy as it is for you guys to get that stuff, I'm definitely not going to find it.
Like I said, it's not that easy.
Correct.
Like I said, I looked for a little bit of time, and I got mine via Brian there a few months ago. I looked for parts, and I'm like, I wasn't finding them. So I'm like, you know what? Repro is fine. He's just going to be up there in that shelf for the next 30 years. So I don't care.
I immediately lost sight of the RoboSkull. Like it was handed to Alexander. He ran out of the room with the Cosmic Cruiser, and I didn't see it again until we were loading the car, because he flew it around and played with it at the hotel and then put it at the top of the closet on top of my laptop so that it wouldn't get broken with all of us shuffling in and out of a hotel room.
I was actually listening to your episode with Stephen recently when you released it there, and I felt like I missed Joe Fest, but I really would have liked to have been at Stephen's table that's Friday night and Saturday, just to see how insane it got, because I think that would have been something to see.
Every time I went over there, Stefan was sitting on the ground putting more figures out. They were selling so fast that I don't know if he ever got off the ground. He was constantly
restocking.
A lot of Joe Fest conversation brought up the fact that the two of you were missing.
Well,
It was felt. It was, we need you there.
Yeah.
Selfishly, I need you there. I got a little in-person taste in 2024. Now it's back to, what is this, Teams calls only now.
Yeah.
But it was good. The boys were wild. They showed out. Hopefully they did you proud. I don't think anybody puked. And
I'm looking forward to my US trip coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, leaving here Thursday. And even though it won't be kind of hitting a show or anything like that, it will be busy, kind of. It'd be all about kind of getting, you know, Liam settled into college and stuff. But I'd love to think, I did do a quick Google search. There are some toy stores in Tyler. So hopefully it all goes well. I might be able to sneak in maybe on the Friday or Saturday and check out a toy store. But certainly I'm really looking forward to getting back to a show stateside, you know, as soon as possible. That is something I'd love to do that.
Conversely, between you guys and Steven and Simon and all those guys, every time a show pops up in your guys' areas, I'm getting the message, and it's making me hungry, a little jealous. I wanna get over.
You coming to Rotter Roll Call? You coming to Rotter Roll Call, Jason?
Yeah, October 2025.
I would absolutely love to. Right now, I'm still looking for the job.
I think this year, I've been chatting to Brian. I think this year. So this year, okay, for Rotter Roll Call, it's doable by flying over the Sunday morning and flying back the Sunday night. So I think I'm going to do that.
Okay.
So the flights are like €160 or something like that. Literally just grab a taxi from Southampton Airport to Fording Bridge. It's about 20 minutes drive, 25 minute drive maybe. And then taxi back at the end of the show.
That is actually, it's a very doable kind of one day trip for us. But I do love the Saturday night crack.
Yeah.
And the banter in the ship or one of the other kind of local pubs. But right now, my head is just focused on getting to Texas and getting back. And after I get back from Texas, I'll have a bit more headspace to, you know, look at the schedule for the rest of the year and then start kind of locking in stuff. So I haven't, I'm definitely going to go to Roll Out Roll Call. 100% I'm going to be there this year. It's just a question of, can I, you know, will it be one day or can I make the 2-day work?
Saturday, yeah.
So your trip in Texas, you're going to be about an hour and a half-ish, hour 45 from Dallas. Will you even have time for any of the Dallas guys to come and meet up for a bite or a beer?
I'm not sure because in a way I'm kind of going into this, you know, going in blind. I don't really know we don't have like an agenda or a schedule. We're just kind of getting to the campus and we're just going to figure it out from there. It could end up being that I'm sitting around on my own all weekend with nothing to do, or it could be like very much kind of hands on with him, you know, getting him settled in and stuff. So I'm not 100% sure how it's going to go, but regardless, I'm looking forward to it. And the weather's definitely going to be better than the weather in Celebridge. So
I can't wait to see you when you're back with a cowboy hat and boots, a little bit of a drawl, maybe a dip in.
I want to get one of those kind of like string ties, you know, with a kind of a
bolo. Oh, yeah, the bolo ties. Yes.
Yeah. You'll be coming back saying y'all.
Y'all.
Oh dear, I will.
Or like you said, you know, totally. Foghorn Leghorn.
Yes.
I can't do that accent. Not until at least I've been to Texas for a weekend.
I say, son, remember to keep up playing the tennis. I want to come back here next year.
Calling everybody boy.
Everybody boy.
Oh, got a big thing of tobacco in your cheek.
Brian Boss Hog Hickey.
But they call me that anyway, so, you know, that's
No, it's going to be, it's exciting that he has this opportunity and that you get to come over and help him with it. If you do get bored, you're about an hour and a half, hour and 45 from Dallas. So there's plenty of guys that might be able to come down and visit.
Okay. Well, do you know what? Never say no to nothing. So that's great.
Who do we know from Dallas?
You've got Dallas Vintage Toys, so...
Dallas Vintage Toys there, but John Russell's there, Ken Fields is there. There's a lot of people, like On and Drew. I don't know if Music lives in Dallas or if he's a couple hours out, and same with Chris Murray. They might be a couple hours outside of Dallas, but they might be close enough to Tyler to hit up. there's a large group of people in Dallas.
Promise free RoboSkulls to anybody who meets you for a pint, Brian.
Terms and conditions apply. No terms and conditions apply.
Greg Brown is there with Cotswolds Toys. He's the one that runs the DFW show. So
okay,
maybe sit down with him, have a drink, and get your invite to DFW.
Start really mapping out some serious convention activity for 2026.
I am a pusher that way. You guys are pushing books. I got to push something.
We will have 3 books out by next Joe Fest, so we really should consider it.
That's right.
Yeah, I missed the boat on a few conventions as well earlier this year. I just didn't get in time to kind of book a table. You know, I'm thinking some of the UK shows where it would have been great to have the Battle Action Force Treasury editions there. Another fantastic book, series of books that we haven't spoken about. They're still getting a great reaction. They're still selling away, which is fantastic.
They're gorgeous.
For people who are not aware, they're kind of stationed between, we've got stock in America and stock in Europe. So Skeletron is kind of handling all of the American orders. So if you're, you know, again, stateside, or it's cheaper to order from Skeletron.com because you'll get much, much more kind of cost-effective shipping from Skeletron's warehouse. But if you're in Britain or Europe or Ireland, then order from TotalToyBooks.com because we're on the right side of the Atlantic.
Skeletron is a hell of a partner, aren't they?
They are the best guys. They really are amazing. You know, I mean, not only have they got, you know, incredible product, incredible toys, and incredible, you know, stuff coming down the line, you know, from the Kickstarter, you know, coming later this year. They're just wonderful people. And I certainly feel blessed to have had the chance to work with Ben and Mark and the wider kind of Skeletron crew, you know, over the last couple of years really has been amazing.
Yeah, it's really nice that, because, you know, Ben and Mark are very positive about everybody's projects. And they're always willing to lend out a helping hand to people and give them advice. So that's really... I think that's kind of the best. They're some of the best representatives for the G.I. Joe fandom that you can think of, because they're so enthusiastic about the projects and the products. So it's very nice to, you know, encounter that. We'll get Ben to roll at roll call this year.
I would love to have some of my American friends come over to roll at roll call, and it's nothing like Joe Fest. It's a very small show. But it's still a lovely atmosphere.
It is the size of an average to small backyard in the United States.
That's great.
But what a backyard.
Yeah, what a backyard. But that's great. You know, I was just talking to my friend Beast about this, because we both attended Gen Con. And Gen Con's numbers were 72,000 attendees. And I'm used to attending Heroes Con, which is like 50-ish thousand. I've attended Dragon Con many times, which is somewhere around the 85,000 attendees. Toy shows are, even the large toy shows are smaller. It's good to remember that perspective. One, because Joe Fest is amazing. I would never take anything from it. It's one of my favorite shows of the year, but it shouldn't take away from the smaller shows. And in fact, some of my favorite shows in the year are less than 1,000 attendees, less than 500 attendees. Good product on the table and good community when commerce stops makes a good show, not necessarily the size of the attendance.
For Roller Roll Call's case, one of the two best pubs in England directly across the road.
Yeah.
So again, the post-commerce community... That's what makes the show. And so not the size of the attendance, and not to take anything away from any other show, but rather to say, like, small shows are very valid. And my goal was 2025, take Alexander home to the West Coast, which sadly has the same cost as flying to Dublin. So, and then 2026, take him to see you guys. Now I'm just looking to find a job, pay off some medical debt, and then I still need to do that. But I very much want to get over there to do Rollout Roll Call, to do TF Nation, to do Thought Bubble, to sit on your guys' couches if you'll open the door when I start banging on them.
Hell yeah.
to sit in the back of the wagon if you actually call the cops when I start banging on your door, whichever is fine. But just to come over and see all of you guys.
I think Jason, you will probably have the exact same feeling we had when we went to Joe Fest, which is that I know everybody here already. Yeah. If you ever came to run a roll call, you would have the same feeling, I'm sure. It was just like, I've met half of you people.
It's home. I just don't know my streets.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why I'm very much in. And I know I've told the story before, but the one time Aaron and I brought Disney up to Alexander, he said, I'd rather go to Europe. And so we were like, done, I'll never bring up Disney again. So
I've already floated with Miriam that I want to do a European toy show next year. Like one of the big European shows, like in Amsterdam or Germany. Because I'm at the point now with the Starcom stuff that the stuff I'm missing is so obscure, I'm literally going to find it down in the back alley in Berlin, as opposed to anywhere else.
Sure.
Yes, sir. Do you want this unproduced Starcom prototype only released in Mattel markets in Greece?
David Bowie and Iggy Pop found a lot of stuff down back alleys in Berlin.
About that point, like so a month ago I owned no Starcom European exclusive figures, and now I own about half of them.
Oh, that's an expensive half.
Wow.
You know what? It's not too bad.
Okay.
So far, I've averaged like €50 each figure.
Oh.
When they're typically like over 100. I've just been lucky in getting them in lots. You know, someone puts a lot up on eBay for $65 and it's like three Starcom figures and they're like, one of them is a Euro exclusive.
Guys, just give my 10-minute warning. I'm going to have to rock out of here in 10 minutes.
All right, in 10 minutes, we start talking bad about you.
Yeah, well, we've already compared it to Falcon Leghorn, so.
He's going to come back line dancing.
I don't know how much worse I could get. Today I actually got two more Starcom Euro exclusives for half nothing. So, like I said, I had none a month ago. Now I'm up to, let me check my thing here. Fine.
Paddy's buying so much Starcom right now that the price of Starcom is going up.
The funny thing is, it's not. I tell you what the difficult thing is. The two or three things that are difficult to get remain extremely difficult to get. Everything else, it's everywhere. But like, I've yet to see a decent Starbase Command set on any of the auction sites here. And that is the base. And I've yet to see a decent Shadow Spy.
So for the base, is it the same? Was it the same on both sides of the ocean?
Yeah, different boxes. It's the only real difference. Most of the product is the same. So the only the difference between the American and European version is obviously the toys were distributed by Coleco in the States, and then Mattel had the rights for Canada and Europe. So the box art is typically different. Like I've got two versions of the Laser Command set here with different packaging art, or rather the same packaging art but flipped. And one is the European release and one is a North American release. But the other thing that the Europeans would do is they had a bunch of unique figure packs where you got one standard issue figure that was released, you know, in the States, and then one Euro exclusive figure that was a repaint of an existing figure. So those repaints are what's tough to find typically. And then there was one two-pack that had two repaints in it. So, you know, for example, you might get one where, you know, Crowbar was a pretty typical figure in the States. He was released with a Shadow Force guy, but it's a different colored Shadow Force guy. And so those different colored ones are the ones that are difficult to get. And then the other big variation is
American stickers.
There's that. There's a couple of European exclusive sticker sets as well. But in the States, they would sell a lot of the vehicles without a figure. And in Europe, they bundled in a figure.
Okay.
So it was typically just a bagged one. But one of those vehicles, the Starhawk in Europe, came with a unique pilot. And that pilot is difficult enough to find.
Yeah.
But I have one of him. I have him on the way. But yeah, that pilot is difficult enough to find. Again, he was just randomly bundled in a unique repaint that was just stuck into the box of the Starhawk.
With the Starcom, upcoming Starcom book, you are bringing Pat Stewart in on that one, right?
Pat will certainly be supervising everything I write.
Perfect. In terms of, since you only have 10 minutes, Brian, since you don't like us enough to hang out longer.
I like my bed too much.
Is your flight tomorrow, Brian, or is it the day after?
It is Thursday. It's we've got an early start Thursday, so. But yeah, so tomorrow I've got a full working day tomorrow just to try and wrap up a bit of stuff for the week.
I know you guys sat down with Ken from Toy Connections.
Yes.
Where else are you guys sitting down? So where else can they listen to you guys talk about this? Because we really didn't go, I mean, we talked about it, but also like it's our 15th or so book conversation. So you guys kind of like very quickly gave me all the juicy bits and then let me stammer and then we tangented. So.
But that's fine. We've covered everything.
It's my favorite way to talk to you guys, but that's why I also ask, like, where...
Just Ken, I think, so far, because we have this shortened schedule, we're really going to be relying on, because we have a pretty good mailing list now through Total Toy Books. We've got about, 1,200 names in that mailing list?
Yeah, so it's around that.
So, you know, we know this is going to be a smaller print run than, say, Star Wars.
Well, it's definitely going to be a case of, you know, similar with the other Action Force books, the only way to be sure you're going to get a copy is to back it, book it now on the Kickstarter. We always overprint. There's a small bit of stock anyway to go into the shop, but that tends to go pretty quick. And in fact, actually on that, and it's probably no harm saying this, because already in the campaign's only live a few hours, and I've had a couple of queries of people asking, will volumes 1 and 2 be available as add-ons in this campaign? And the answer is no. They're out of print. And because those books were done under license with Hasbro and Rebellion, they can't be reprinted. If the license, they have to be renewed to do a reprint, essentially. Whereas the difference with this book here, it's documenting essentially the personal collections of Bob Reakin, Brian Turner, and the Rapa One Pape team. And then with the only licensed material then is the Neville Chadwick archive that'll be done through their agent. So it's not relying on the Rebellion Hasbro license agreement for this particular book. So what I would say is, you know, the short answer that I've turned into a very long answer is that we won't be reprinting volume 1 and 2 and offering them as an add-on for this. So really, this is it. This is the final Action Force book. I mean, realistically, it's going to be the final book. So if you want to get a slice of the Action Force story, this is your chance to get it. And as we say, it will be a very complete story. It'll have a lot of information that's not in volumes 1 and 2. But if it's the only Action Force book you get, you will be very knowledgeable on the topic. And there'll be so much great visual material in there to look at. It'll be totally, totally worth it.
I'm glad that this is just an excuse for us to hang out then some more, because it's always a pleasure sitting down with you guys. And I know we use your products as that excuse a lot. It just makes scheduling easier. I just like that you guys sit down and just bullshit.
Give me a few weeks to get me more research done on Starcom. We'll do that inevitable Starcom episode towards the end of the year as well.
I would love that. We've talked about doing a Starcom conversation for a while. I think that would be a joy. I wish I was more of an expert in Starcom. It could pitch helping, but I'm just going to be the good fan.
I'm not particularly an expert in it either. I'm just someone who really was enamored by the toys as a kid.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, you know what? I'm basically forcing Brian to do this as our next book.
But they are beautiful toys, without a doubt. They're actually brilliant mm-hmm. toys, and yeah. I would have loved an army of those characters as a kid. Absolutely.
You know how to say, you know, you do one for the studio and one for yourself when you're making movies. So the Star Wars book was one for Brian, and then the Starcom book is one for me.
Perfect.
Brian gets a book on his favorite toy line of all time, and now I want a book on my favorite toy line of all time.
The Star Wars book is gorgeous looking. I can't wait for that. I'm glad it'll be here before the end of the year. As always, I will read it from cover to cover. That is that's just the truth.
Surprising how difficult that book was to get finished. And it was because we had so much stuff to put in it.
Yeah.
That was probably the toughest design job Brian ever had, I'd say.
An 800-page book to fit into 200 pages?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know what? It's I actually got to read that book cover to cover, I'd say at least three times, because I proofread it cover to cover twice. I had to read it before I did any of the design work, just to get it into my head what I needed to do, how I was going to tackle it. And then, of course, as I'm designing it, I was kind of, you know, reading it as well. So it actually is a very, there's a lot of information in there. If you're interested in Palitoy's Star Wars history, there's some great answers to great questions in there. It's packed full of information. You'll come away a lot wiser with stuff that you didn't know before, and maybe reaffirming things that you kind of figured or you thought you knew.
Even the last day before we were going to print, you messaged me to say, I've just got access to this Palitoy memo, which tells us how many TIE fighters they imported. And they're like, where do we put that? We literally have nowhere to put that in the book that we have, this memo that is like, they imported X number of TIE fighters, an internal memo. And you're just like, Jesus Christ, where do we put it? And literally you're just like, we can edit one of the captions before it goes to press tomorrow and try and get it in there.
Wow.
I'll give you an exclusive, Jason, for the show, right? In the same vein as that example Paddy just gave there, the book had gone to print and I was over in Leicester with Bob Regan. We were attending a show there and we were promoting and selling the last of my Palitoy story. And it was in Leicester, so there was a lot of ex-Palitoy staff came along to come by and say hi to Bob. And we got talking to a guy from the purchasing department, and he confirmed what was only rumor in some Star Wars forums, but he was able to confirm that there are indeed Palitoy produced two separate Millennium Falcons.
Oh.
Separate from the Kenner one, because obviously Kenner produced their Millennium Falcon. Palitoy took Kenner's tooling and copied that to do their first Millennium Falcon. And then a couple of years later, to keep up with the demand, they got a second set of tooling made from another tooling supplier. The tooling from the two different Palitoy suppliers is incompatible. So it essentially means you've got two different Millennium Falcons produced by Palitoy. So on the outside, they look identical, but when you drill down into the individual parts, they are different. So the book had already gone to print, and that information was too good to not get it in. So I had to contact the printer and I had to change one of the pages where I worked in a caption that summed up that story as concisely as we could kind of shoehorn it in there. And that's going to be included in the book as well.
That's incredible.
So it's just, yeah, just 50, 60 words, just confirming, you know, that resource, that information and getting that in there.
Roger also mentioned that they borrowed the Kenner tooling briefly as well, but Kenner had forgot to send over the top plate.
The roof.
Of the Millennium Falcon. So they had to tool up a new roof for the Millennium Falcon to run the Kenner mold. Even where they borrowed the tools from Kenner, it's not exactly the same tool. They had to do their own tool for that roof.
I haven't seen one in real life from Star Wars, but in July, when I was at Kentuckiana, I did see, it was pretty rough, but it made me want one very badly. The Palitoy Action Force base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things I've only ever seen pictures of. I had no idea how big it was. And I was walking past a glass case and peripherally I caught it and knew immediately. You know, it was one of those immediate, oh, that's that. And I turned.
Those primal recognitions, yeah. Where you're like, I know what that is. Yeah.
And so then I'm texting Alexander, where the hell are you? He's somewhere in the store. He comes over and we're both just staring at it. He was like, oh, I would put that on the floor. And I was like, yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Somebody with us was like, it's cardboard. You're not going to play with that. And we both looked at him like,
Oh no, those Palitoy cardboard play sets are sacred in your house.
So I haven't seen the Star Wars one, but just seeing the Action Force one. Whoa.
Bob playtested the Action Force one by sitting on it to make sure it wouldn't crumple. So when they initially designed it. So yeah, so you can, like, a full grown man could sit on it and it wouldn't get damaged. He made sure to test that.
It's definitely one of those future dreams.
Well, you know what? If I see one at Roll at Roll Call, I'll make sure it gets to you.
I mean, I still got to get a job first, but I appreciate it. We'll figure it out. But it is so, but in talking about the Star Wars, it reminded me of that from Action Force, because it's a nice bridge between the two toy lines, between both of Brian's loves. And then I can't wait for Starcom as well. Like, it's definitely a toy I do not have a single childhood memory playing with.
No, I actually, and I, because they were expensive, I don't think I had very much of it when I was a kid either. But they, again, that primal memory of looking at a Starmax bomber in the box in the toy store at home and thinking, that is the coolest fucking ship ever.
Yeah. Well, yes, it is amazing. I had like that sort of primal sense memory of the cartoon, but I can't remember the toys. But as soon as they were in my hands, I was like, oh, yeah, these work.
And I think that sound is burned into your brain as well.
Yes.
Of the gears working. Like, that, as soon as you hear that again, you're like, yes, I am 7 years old again.
I know we took up your 10 minutes. You got to go.
Got to rock and roll. I'm sorry, dudes.
Right.
But look, enjoy the Texas. Rest of the night. Jason, just let me just say, dude, it's always great chatting to you. I see Patty loads, but it is always great seeing Patty too, always.
How far do you guys live from each other again? 45?
So
20 minutes.
There's no traffic. 15 minutes. If there's no traffic, it's 12 minutes.
How are you guys not hanging out in person every day?
But he's got a real job.
I've got a real job.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.